15 years ago, I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of good or evil, right or wrong. I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
What do we do?
He's been here once tonight. I think he'll come back. I'm gonna wait for him.
Unfortunately, my co-hosts aren't here because, let's be honest, they're pussies. And I wanted to talk about a horror film because it's Halloween. So I got Rob Hunter from Film School Rejects over to discuss John Carpenter's The Original Halloween. Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you think it's too on the nose to be talking about Halloween on Halloween?
Well, you can make that argument, or you can say that everybody else has already finished talking about it because the movie's so old and they're talking about new movies, and therefore you're an innovator for going back to the original.
I like that way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure my co-hosts will disagree, but they're not here to do that, so...
Well, then they're lost.
So I guess the first place to start with Halloween is, when was the first time you actually sat down and saw this film?
I didn't see it in the theaters, so it would have been at some point later on. I'm going to say on VHS, probably in the mid-80s, early 80s, mid-80s, I would probably say.
How old were you at that point, if you don't mind?
If it was then, I was, well, it depends. Let's see. I was 8 when it came out, so, what, like 13, 14?
So you were the target market at that point.
No, a little too young when it first came out. But yeah, I was approaching the target as the sequel started coming out, obviously.
I mean, come on. Naked women and a guy with a blade killing people. That sounds like 13-year-old target market.
Yeah, but it was also, well, I guess by the time I saw it, then yes. When it first came out, I wouldn't have been the target, because obviously I was too young, but also because it was, I mean, aside from Black Christmas, it was kind of, you know, one of the very, very first, you know, to mix these things together, in some kind of, you know, mass marketed way that worked. So they didn't really know that market, which is why also if you look at the sequels, since they knew that was the formula, they started upping, you know, the number of naked ladies you see taking showers, and the number of, you know, knife wounds and stuff like that. But the original was much more about, you know, the tension and the suspense of it all.
Okay. I actually saw this movie for the first time a couple years ago, because, to be quite honest, and I've mentioned this 1,000 times, I'm not a big horror fan. I find a lot of the horror movies to be bad. But I gotta be honest, this movie captivated me from the first moment in, and it's because of what you said there. It is a film which grabs attention and keeps it there, as opposed to being the formulaic, let's just put as many murders as we can and as many breasts as we can into 90 minutes.
And to be clear, there's nothing wrong with breasts or murders.
Nothing wrong with breasts.
But
that's what the internet was made for.
Right.
If you want that, you can go to that corner, which is a very big corner. and enjoy your breasts. And all other body parts.
Alright, let's just try and keep this PG rated, okay?
So, tell me, what is your feeling on Halloween?
The movie?
Just in general, broad strokes to do with Halloween.
I just think it is. I mean, it gets the respect it deserves. It is a classic. It is an originator. Like I said, Black Christmas I think came out a year or two before then. I could be wrong. And that also had the killer stalking young women in the sorority house. So it was a similar type of thing. But that was Canadian, so it doesn't really count. It started a trend for better or worse of these kinds of movies. But what the sad thing is that the vast majority of the imitators and the ones that came afterwards, like we just said, I mean, they pretty much only took, the killer, the shower scenes, the knife, that kind of thing. That's all they took away from it. Most of them didn't take away, the actual smart writing, the good acting, the interesting storyline behind, the killer. Even though here, obviously, you don't get a lot of it, but you get kind of a tease of it in the first movie. It just got everything right. I mean, if you watch it, there's just really nothing that Carpenter and friends did wrong with it. The screenplay he wrote with Deborah Hill, it's minimal. I mean, it just gets to the point and just rolls with it. And it's just really solidly entertaining. There's no fat on it. And again, it's just there's not a lot of extraneous material in there. It's straightforward, it's simple, it's suspenseful, and it's a lot of tension in a movie that really, for the budget and for the cast involved and all that, no one would have expected it.
You bring up words like innovative, and it was very lean. It didn't have that much fat in it. And I don't think there's any other way to put this film, because when John Carpenter does movies, I mean, when I look at some of his other ones, Assault on Precinct 13, is it 13th? Why can't I remember the number right now? 13th, right. The Thing, and not Big Trouble in Little China. That's a bit more bombastic in comparison, I would assume. They Live. There are things he does with these movies where he hones in on the genre in which he's aiming for, and he tries not to diverge at all. And the weirdest thing to do with this movie is what I found revisiting it recently is how he manages to make it more of a POV film, in that while there's a lot of the movie that we're spending with Jamie Lee Curtis or her friends, or as she's on the run, there's also a big aspect of this movie where where the camera has stepped back a lot, and we're basically Michael, who's just sitting down and watching people walk past or watching someone inside a house, and that becomes very unsettling very quickly.
It's unsettling, but it also, I think part of that too is that it's from the very beginning of the film, you're in the POV of the killer as they're killing someone. And so it's not, and you see the hand with the mask, you see, walking up through the stairs, through the hallway, stalking the woman, the young girl. And so that's unsettling because it does put you right into it. And then once it does the removal of the mask and the camera pulls back away from that POV and you see that it's the little boy, it's kind of like a double slam of like, okay, one, you were just in there, but two, it's a kid. And so it gets you from the very beginning. And then later on, while you're getting the same POV, again, you're returning to that mindset, whether it be like an actual POV of him, what he's actually seeing, or just kind of the shots of the breathing, where you hear it, so you know that even if you're not looking out from his eyes, he's around there somewhere. You're very, very close to him. And so I think that all adds to the effect, to the scares, to the tension and everything else.
And you talk about that opening scene with the child and the mask. Something I find very interesting, this movie was released in 1978, and at that point there was a plethora of high violence and high pornographic, to a point of pornographic films that were being released within the mainstream. I mean, they weren't to the level that they are today, but they were around. And I feel almost like Carpenter utilized that mask in the opening shot POV as a way to disguise a lot of that violence. Because for a movie which is about a psychopathic killer, there really isn't that much violence in this film when it comes to gore on screen.
Oh, there definitely isn't. It's similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre in that regard. People, if you just kind of like take a quick poll of people who've seen it, maybe seen it a while ago or when they were kids, they're going to remember both movies as being very violent, probably and quite possibly very bloody, but neither movie is. They're both about the buildup. They're both about, like, you know, what you don't see, what you're imagining once you know somebody's been grabbed or doors closed or you see the figure walk after somebody, what you're seeing in your head. Because in both cases, the filmmakers, you know, one, they're limited by budget, but two, I think they know that there's really nothing that they're going to do on screen that's going to, you know, surpass the imagined, terrors and suffering that is going on in the viewers' heads. And so I think that both movies succeed in that regard as well. As far as the violence goes, I mean, I think a lot of the violence in cinema up through that point was was more, I mean, Michael, at least in the first one, wasn't obviously a supernatural killer. He is a real person, but most of the movies, the violence movies up to that point were more, you know, gang oriented or, you know, mobster movies, that kind of thing. It wasn't really, there weren't like, you know, these psychopathic killers walking around for the most part. Obviously there are exceptions. And so that was also a different spin that they put onto it. So it was violent, perceived violence, but it was more about this, you know, a serial killer, psycho killer, mass murderer, as opposed to, the mob or the mafia or something like that.
Yeah, totally. One of the things that this film kind of draws on, and it's a big theme in horror films, and I know I don't know the answer to this question. I don't know if you do. I don't know where it originated from, if it was this film or previous movies, was the idea of premarital sex and a repercussion of having premarital sex. While these movies have these elements of violence and nudity and all of these things which are all faux pas in a very high Christian community, which is America, all of these movies, they always try to push the notion that it's always people who deserve to be punished. And one of the big things that they punish them for is premarital sex. In this film, it's definitely obvious that it's only after a character engages in that act are they then murdered by our psychopathic killer. Why do you think this obsession from our character, is it just something thrown in the mix?
I think it was. I don't know if it was ever intentional when it first started happening. But even Black Christmas, which was 1974, you had the sluttier, trashier sorority girls were the ones who were dying along with the guys. Well, the main character was kind of the more timid one, the shyer one. But as with Halloween, though, I mean, they're still being targeted. It's just that they happen to be the ones that, you know, either outsmart, you know, or outfight or outwit whatever the killer. And so they get away, at least, you know, to a certain point. That's the whole term. The term final girl refers to these kind of characters. I mean, they're the ones, and you can usually spot them. Nowadays, you get a lot of movies that kind of are a bit too meta, and so they kind of will twist it intentionally around. But the main standard for these kind of movies was always this final girl. You could always pick out early on in the movie that was, like you said, either the one that was the virgin or the one that was, you know, the good girl. Not obscenely good, but just kind of like, you know, just kind of like a good, normal, average American girl. You knew that she was going to be the one to survive until the end, past the end credits. So I think it just became kind of a pattern, just like shower scenes, you know, the POV, all that kind of stuff. I think it just became a standard. And because most of these movies, I mean, back to your earlier point about horror movies, a lot of them being garbage, I think a lot of movies, period, are garbage. So, like, I mean, I usually don't like saying that I like or dislike a genre because there are examples in every type of any genre that are good and obviously a lot that are bad. But horror films in particular, yeah, a lot of them, because it's a really simple formula. And so they picked up, you know, these kind of standout points and then, you know, forgot to put anything worthwhile around them and then just started pushing it out there. And so people came to expect these certain things. The good girl's going to live. The bad girls are going to get it. You know, and so maybe it was cathartic because, okay, that the trashy girl's getting it, but we never get to see her in the shower first or whatever it might be. For some reason, yeah, it took off. And in the puritanical, you know, U.S., I mean, again, I think a lot of people, they wouldn't necessarily admit it, but a lot of them are saying, well, yeah, sure, she deserves it, because too many of them kind of champion the bad guys in these movies, if that makes sense.
And I mean, the weirdest thing about that, the whole notion of the final girl and the reason why all the other girls aren't the final girl, is that in this movie, they specifically put in, there was this one line when the doctor is coming back into the town searching for Michael, and he's trying to explain who Michael is, and he says something to the effect of he's pure evil. He has no good, no bad. He has no conscience. He has no sense. He just does things impulsively. So it's a question as to if he's doing these things without a true conscience, why is it that the film is supposed to have this conscience with it?
As far as from the audience's perception?
Yes, it just strikes me as very weird when it comes to this movie as it's placed into that horror genre of placing judgment on the world.
Well, like I mean, again though, I'd say that I don't think. I mean, I love Carpenter's early stuff, and his earlier ones, the ones you mentioned earlier, are fantastic movies. But I think that we'd be giving him and Hill too much credit to say that they actually gave the film or the storyline and the events that much thought. I mean, it is a simple, straightforward movie. It's a fantastic movie, but I don't think it has the depth that that its effect on later films kind of makes it seem like it has. You know what I mean? I don't think that they gave that much effort and thought to the psychology of what was going on with their characters, let alone what the audience was going to take away from it. I think they just knew that they had a tight, compact little thriller with a likable lead character who the audience would want to see survive, an interesting killer, and I think that was, you know, the beginning and the end of it.
Right.
or not. What the hell do I know?
this is definitely one of those cases where this movie has been put on such a high pedestal due to its influence on the rest of horror cinema, psycho killer cinema, I want to call it, that immediately people, and I'm going to have to immediately put myself into this category, want to try and overanalyze it, to try and find what might have been put in there that maybe, as you said, might not have really been there in the first place. Maybe even the existence of this doctor character is John Carpenter going, well, the movie's only 50 minutes at this point, it should probably be longer.
Exactly. You've got to have more characters. You can't be just straightforward like hunt and slash, you know, in the house when they were, because it's going to grow tiring. Just like movies that toss in, you know, kind of breaks where there's a little bit of humor. I mean, it's meant to kind of deflate the tension, because you can't just have like a constantly growing tension. There's got to be breaks in it to give the viewers, you know, a chance to, you know, catch their breath, to kind of reset the film, and then you start again, and that's kind of what, you know, how the good ones succeed. And so I think in this case, I mean, yeah, you've got to have these outside characters to show somebody's after him. As far as the description of him being, you know, pure evil and all that, I think just plays better. If you just said, you know, hey, you know, he's a wackadoodle, we've got to go catch him, that's not threatening. You know, whereas if you got a doctor saying, you know, this guy is the essence of pure evil, I mean, that's some pretty heavy stakes, and it really makes you concerned. And that's also why you get the payoff in the end when, you know, he's shot 5 times but still manages to get up and take off.
Yeah.
I mean, because he is pure evil. He's not just, you know, some nut job, you know, who's upset at his mother or whatever, you know. So I think that gives him as a killer more weight. It makes him scarier.
But that's the weirdest part of it, is that they do make him into this idealized version of the psycho killer. The film does make it into that.
Idealized in the sense of...
he is pure evil. He isn't just a man.
Right, but I don't think that you don't get that until the very end. I don't think. I mean, until that end, where he's shot 5 times, falls from a second-story window, and then still manages to disappear, until that point, he's still a man in a mask, regardless of what the doctor said. Because the doctor, I mean, as played by Donald Pleasance, is obviously kind of hopped up. I mean, you know, sure, he's a doctor, but he's also really excited and stressed. So, I mean, he could be exaggerating. You don't know. I mean, and until that point, it's not like Michael Myers does anything besides being able to catch people without ever running, which I guess is impressive, he doesn't do anything supernatural or anything, you know? He's not hurt by anybody or killed by anybody or attempted, you know, nobody gets him until that very end. And so he is just a guy in a mask until he's shot 5 times, falls from the second story window, and manages to escape, you know, basically unscathed. That's when you realize, well, hell, you know, he is more than just a nut job. Now, the later movies obviously just took that and ran with it, you know, and they're burning him alive, they're gouging his eyes out, they're shooting him with shotguns and everything else, and he still comes back. So at that point, it just gets comical. But here, you know, until that last shot, he was just an escaped lunatic, you know, from an asylum, and that was it.
Well, I'm happy to say I still have yet to watch any of the sequels.
Well, I recommend 2. Halloween 2 is good. It's not nearly up to the level of 1, but it's actually a pretty solid little thriller, and picks up like literally like moments after the first one ends. And it's good. You can tell that they kind of pushed for more, because this was 81 was when I think when the second one came out, and so they pushed for more, you know, gore and more nudity, and so there's more of that in the movie. But it's still a
more breasts.
Yep, but it's still a solid enough thriller on its own merits. It's after that where the series just begins. 3 is a completely different series. Obviously, a completely different movie. It's a standalone.
I just remember, like, as a teenager, seeing all the advertisements for Halloween H2O.
Yeah,
and no. I never watched it, but I just remember seeing those and going like, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah, if you absolutely have got nothing else to do with your time at all, including sleeping, eating, or just daydreaming, then fine, pick up those movies and give them a watch. But otherwise, yeah, they're not worth it. Not at all.
I mean, you see, herein lies the one thing, and I keep pushing this idea of how idealized he is, and how I want to give the film credit for those ideas of the puritanical, in how they create this character. And it has to do with even something as simple as that mask that they give him. Other than the opening scene where he's a child and they rip off the mask, we never see his face again, if I'm correct.
There's a brief, very, very brief. I think it's towards the end. Unless I'm thinking of one, right? Where it kind of comes off a little bit. When he comes out of the bedroom behind Jamie Lee Curtis and attacks her.
Yeah.
She kind of rips the mask off a little bit. And that's when Loomis comes in and you see the guy. He's kind of in the shadows, but he kind of pulls the mask back on again. So it's a very, very brief glimpse. But yeah, I think that, again, when they made that movie, they weren't thinking about sequels. They weren't thinking about anything else. And so they gave a brief glimpse because, again, to them, this is, you know, just a guy who's escaped from an asylum. But yeah, after that, you don't really see anything. And that was really the only glimpse of him. And again, it was shadows as well.
Yeah. Because all of those things point towards the purity, the pure evilness of this character, the lack of emotions.
The lack of emotions, but also the lack of, if you can't put a face to the killer, to this person, to this personality, then yeah, it could be any face under there. It could be any, you know, it could look like anything. And I think that, you know, again, adds to the scares of the viewer because it is something where it's an unknown. It's not like if you have a movie where a serial killer is walking around and they're not wearing a mask of any kind, and you see them and you see them walking around, you see them wearing regular clothes, you know, it diffuses a lot of the tension and the scares from the character. I mean, the movie can still be good, obviously, but it's going to take away a lot of that element. Whereas someone who's in a mask, that you, it's weird, like you just said, you know, it's emotionless because all you see is a straight mask. You don't see anything going on underneath it, let alone be able to put a face to it, period.
So what you're saying, Rob, is that Alex Cross is a better movie.
I'm going to guess you haven't been listening for the past 20 minutes.
I mean, you can totally see Matthew, what's his face? Matthew Fox.
Yeah, but that goes to my point, though. He was not at any point a threatening. That's a terrible movie, by the way.
I don't know. I haven't seen Alex Cross.
It's absolutely abysmal. But that's, yeah. You take away, you can see him, and so you can see his goofiness, and so it takes away the scares. He was not a threatening character in the slightest. You know, and that's partially because, I mean, you see him and everything. That's also because it's a poorly written, poorly directed movie.
Let's move away from Alex Cross.
All right, thanks.
Bad joke. Let's move away. But yeah, that's this movie, Halloween, not Alex Cross. I guess it remains worthy of praise. Even three decades plus.
Well, it's one of the nice ones because it deserves the praise both because of, you know, what it got started. Because, you know, even though there's lots of bad ones, the horror genre is still, you know, in the slasher killers and stuff like that. There are tons of great movies in that genre. And so it's fun to see that a lot of them kind of owe a debt back to Halloween. And that's a good thing. But even better is being able to go back to the original movie, watch it, and see that it still holds up. Not just as like a standard bearer as far as what it created going down the line, but just on its own merits as a you know 90 minute movie or whatever it is, it's just a solid, still 3 decades later, still a solid, you know, entertaining, suspenseful film.
I mean the score that they put in there, I can't remember. Did Carpenter do the score himself?
Yep. Yeah, it's one of the eternal themes that's not going to be forgotten.
Yeah, it comes back to the idea of the trimmed down simple score, like even like Jaws did with Whenever the Shark Appeared, and that's how it works in this movie, where every time that we switch to that POV shot or we see Michael, it turns on that simple trimmed down sound, which is the moment we hear it, we know, oh shit, something's about to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's the entire thing. Was like I said, was very straightforward, very trimmed down, but it was all quality. You know, and every one of these little steps, even though they're none of them were big and bombastic. There was no big budget behind it. It was like the highest grossing independent film for a long time too, and it deserved it. And the fact that it still gets, you know, anniversary plays periodically, like it does, like it just recently hit theaters again. I might still be in theaters right now, actually. I don't know. You know, in select theaters. I mean, it's because it's a really good movie still 30 years later.
Anyways, I want to thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me, Rob.
Well, thanks for flying me down to Trinidad.
Sure. While you're here, you should go to Maracas, go get some shark. It's tasty.
Excellent.
So once again, you're with Film School Rejects. Is there anything special you want the people to know that's coming out sometime next week?
On the site?
To look forward to on the site?
Everything on the site special.
That I do agree to.
We're doing a 31 Days of Horror this month. So I mean, if people are horror fans, they should check out the site and see that every day we've been doing a post. Yeah, there's some fun stuff there.
Yeah, I've promised myself since it won the Scariest Movie Award, whatever we want to call it, on Film School Rejects, I'll finally go and watch the original Texas Chainsaw.
See, the sad thing is, I mean, obviously our readers, it's, you know, it works out to be the general opinion. I don't think that it's not even close to being the scariest movie.
So, hey, if I had my way, Death Proof would have won that award.
Do you define scary in some different way from the rest of us?
I define scary as what made me scared.
Okay. Well, for the rest of us, I would recommend movies like Them, the French movie. That one's really scary. Even The Exorcist, which came down to being a close
second. Oh, I love The Exorcist.
Second. That one was even, I think, a little bit scarier than Texas Chainsaw, but that's just my opinion.
Go watch Halloween, guys, if you haven't. It's really good.
And Halloween 2, and Halloween 3, and then skip the rest of them. So just understand that Halloween 3 has nothing to do with anything, but it's still a fun little movie.
I will go watch Halloween 2.
Do that.
Alright. So thanks so much, and good night, everyone.
Well, thank you, and good night, everyone, as well.
Tommy? Lindsay? Babies? I'm gonna take a little walk.
Is it the boogeyman? I'm scared.
There's nothing to be scared of.
Are you sure? How?
I killed him.
You can't kill the boogeyman.